Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Thank you for downloading the podcast. We managed to talk about the three games against Spurs today. We've got a decent review on the Manchester derby. And Foden, Mahrez and other business going on at Manchester City. I'm here with Adam. I'm here with Sam. It was a good chat. Enjoy.
Manchester City Football Social with Blue Moon Rising.
Good evening and welcome back to the Manchester City Football Social with Blue Moon Rising. It's Manchester Derby week and I'm joined by Mr. Glass Half Full himself. It's Walter Smith. Hello.
How are you doing? It's I always love this. The build-up for this week, it's some people dread it. I love it.
And, of course, Mr. Sam Lee, who's in the blue half of Manchester tonight.
Pretty much always these days. Yeah, hello.
Get in touch tonight. We've got a really chocker show. We haven't been live since the Spurs. Well,
yeah, that's mad. I thought about that earlier. I thought, has it really only been 6 days ago?
Obviously, we're going to talk about the Manchester derby later on, and we're going to have a little bit of a chat later on about Phil Foden, who's now scored in every competition he's played in this season. But we want you guys to get in touch as always. Give us a call on 0345 111 7625 or text us on 87711, or if you're on Twitter, it's at MCR Footy Social. But first, as I mentioned, the Spurs trilogy. Who wants to walk us through it? So let's go all the way back to Tottenham Hotspur away in the Champions League, the start of... what was a mad week?
Oh, it was a mad week. And I thought we were sort of at a severe disadvantage as well, because we'd been down in London for a 5:30 kickoff, I believe, against Brighton in the FA Cup. So we only had, you know, a few days to prepare for it. And the squad rotation that obviously Pep felt he needed to do. But then you had Tottenham had 9 days to prepare for this, and it was at their home ground. So it infuriates me in some respects that, you know, the FA... as they seem to have bent the rules now for the Champions League and who plays when, why couldn't they have done that for either City, Tottenham? I just thought everything was jam-packed into those few days. And City, to be fair, they looked leggy on the night. They looked a little bit off the pace. And, you know, there was not as our first team, our strongest 11 certainly wasn't playing. So that's, I think, was the Achilles heel which undone us over the two legs.
Sam, is that the issue? Is it because of the squad rotation, or was that Pep planning too far in advance? What went wrong on that night?
Well, I mean, I suppose the whole debate really does go back to the reasons behind, you know, picking that team in the first leg. There's no point dwelling on it too much because it's gone, and, you know, and to be fair, the second leg there was enough there to go through, wasn't there? But in the first leg, I suppose it all comes down to that decision. I mean, I can personally understand the reasons for it. We've spoken a lot about that. I did this show the night after that game, having come back from London, and, you know, I'm sure it's been talked about a lot since. You know, basically he wanted to have a close game, not lose it in the first leg, which he kind of feared they could. And again, maybe, you know, that fear is, you know, Guardiola's kind of paranoia in these big games, the whole overthinking it thing. Maybe that contributes to that. But, you know, there are reasons to believe that with Liverpool last year, you know, Lyon this year, even Schalke, you wanted to stay in the game. And, you know, Aguero's missed penalty.
Exactly.
Dalph having been at left back because, you know, Mendy was injured, Zinchenko was injured, Bernardo being injured as well. You know, if Bernardo had played that role instead of Mahrez, then you've maybe got a different game as well, because in terms of the attacking, you've got just a much more consistent threat. So, it in the end, on the night, it came down to fine margins. Whether that's Guardiola's fault, in inverted commas, comes down to your perspective on what you think about his team selection. Because the other argument is, if they'd have played their normal game, maybe the City would have won. But Guardiola's thoughts was, if they played their normal game, maybe they would have lost.
Well, they seem, well, Pep's first team, as it were. We definitely played it in the second leg. It's just a shame that everyone forgot how to defend for 15 minutes. But that game, for me, we attacked as well as we have done all season. There were a few chances where we should have scored. There was one really late on with Gundogan, wasn't there?
In the near post.
Which felt like the moment, however. We know what the moment is. Walter, cheer me up. It was probably the weirdest I've ever felt.
I think that's unprecedented, and I don't think that's good for people either.
It was.
It's 10 times worse than a last minute goal against you, isn't it? And it's just celebrating for a full minute.
Are you on about the VAR?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I think about the VAR is. I mean, that was for me the biggest kind of celebration since the Aguero.
Yeah, easy.
I mean, the whole place just went crackers. And, you know, we had families. I was hugging strangers. You know, just everybody jumping on top of it. Limbs, I think they call it, the kids of today. Just limbs everywhere. And what it does for me is, in all the Tottenham players that were down and out, there was nobody contesting this. That was their dream shattered. So then it went to this VAR. And then, you know, the correct decision's being called. But what it does... And it's not just a Manchester City. You know, the people were poking fun and, you know, giving us grief, et cetera, which is a part of football. But what it does, every team should realise that, do you celebrate a goal? Do you lose yourself in the moment of football? Because everybody around me, because we're not used to this VAR, everyone just completely lost themselves in the moment, which is part of the beauty of football.
Yeah.
And, you know, in so many ways, I'm for VAR. And then this, and especially, you know, the referee was given two sort of views of the handball, and he wasn't shown the handball. So I agree, it's going to get better, but as teething problems and as that ability to lose yourself in a game, you know, and that's why we go. You know, you lose yourself with, you know, the people around you and what you're watching unfold on the pitch. If that's taken away, one of the essences of football is taken away. So you've got to be careful, I think. And it was quite a worrying thing, not just for City fans, but all football fans who go to games.
Well, I wish I could have bottled that moment. When it went in, or we thought we'd scored and we thought everything was fine, I thought, right. And immediately in my head I thought, it's all just fallen into place in that moment of time. Sterling scores the winner, which would have been his hat-trick. And everything was so perfect. And like you say, for those of us who go and are lucky enough to go to games, that's why you go, for that moment, that Aguero moment. Imagine that Aguero moment had gone to VAR. Obviously, we know it wouldn't have been offside. It wouldn't. But the emotion's gone. As soon as it went to VAR, everyone just stopped. You can't tell me, even if that goal's given, that celebration after VAR would have just been anything more than a bit of relief. The issue now, like you say, is when are you allowed to celebrate a goal? I wish the linesman had put his flag up, because then you know it's coming.
That's the thing, but they don't. That contributed to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, the linesman probably didn't spot this one anyway, because it was such
I think that's never, ever being given. It was so tight.
But even if he was like played on and he was about a yard offside, the linesman would have kept the flag down anyway. And that's going to be the big change, because now... The best example is, and I don't want to bore everyone with this, because I've been saying this for years, so anyone who's been paying attention to me anyway is going to be bored by it. But the best example is, if your striker goes through on goal, everyone looks at the linesman. The striker looks at the linesman.
Yeah.
If he goes through, scores, everyone goes mad. And you think, that's absolutely fine, that's a goal. Now, obviously, the linesman isn't going to flag, they're going to wait. And that's where the doubt comes in. You think, do we celebrate? Because those ones are going to be pulled back.
What's the point in having linesmen?
Yeah, we'll get to that stage.
There isn't one.
No, there is. You've got which way the throw-in's going to go. But, I mean, that's the point, you know. That's their job in many respects. Yeah. Or maybe they can spot certain incidents. I remember it was the linesman who spotted Joey Barton with his elbow. You know, they've still got a role to play. But, I mean, their main job, the main sort of impact that they have on a game normally is with these offside decisions. And... I don't think anybody saw it. It's just some guy on the telly saw it, and our dreams were shattered.
Can I just paraphrase? Well, not paraphrase. Directly quote from Guardiola on Friday when he said, talking about VAR is effing boring. And can we just talk
can
about.
Can we stop? But it's
can
gone.
Can we just move on?
It's gone from, though, hasn't it? VAR's meant to stop this. It's just making it worse.
Well, it's better than discussing the FFP, to be fair.
Yeah, that's very true. Don't get Sam started on that. The handball, I don't... Again, let's not dwell on this. We'll move on to the Saturday game. But the handball was a weird one.
The handball, oh, yeah.
Because, for me...
We're still on this, aren't we?
No, but I think we'd probably all agree that in the Champions League... Well, this is me with very, very blue-tinted glasses on. That in the Champions League this season, given the right angle, was probably handball. In any... common sense game of football, it's not handball because he can't get out of the way, but as we've seen from other games, penalties gone against us.
Yeah, but the hands have been away from the body, haven't
yeah
they?
It's just
see I disagree with you. I think it's hit his hand, gone down onto his leg, and then gone into the goal. So the hand has been part of the goal scoring process. So I think if he's seen that, there's no way he's going to give it. But the fact that somebody somewhere has given him two different angles to have a look at that doesn't show the infringement, you've got to be kidding.
That was weird. But, like we say, let's not dwell on VAR, but by all means...
Well, reaction to all of that, I mean, because I was talking about this with mates who are City fans, and this was stuff I was saying, like, you know, it's 10 times worse, the last-minute goal is completely new.
Yeah.
To have those kind of wild celebrations for, like, a full minute, and then to have that ripped away, you know, I knew a couple of... people who were saying, you know, they took a couple of days to get over it or whatever. And then Friday or maybe Saturday morning, I thought, hold on, how's this going to even affect the players? You see the picture of, like, Gundogan crying, what he'd said beforehand about...
Pep on his knees.
Yeah, exactly. And you think, how is this going to affect them? And then they've got Tottenham again, and fine. City had the advantage over Spurs in, you know, they could rotate the team a bit more. They had fresher legs. But in terms of the mind, I was thinking, going into that game, this could be where it goes, but... Again, what
I was
the
so impressed
of City's resilience.
So on to Saturday's game, the final in this trilogy. We've lost 1-1-1 and been heartbroken. This was the game that, like you said, I thought after Wednesday night, how are they going to be in the right mind? I was worried about temper because we know some of our players have a temper.
Saw Sterling's temper for the first time.
Yeah, I've never seen that before. But I thought the way that they came out the start of the game on Saturday was just excellent. Even the fans, everyone seemed right back up for it for the first 10 minutes. And just thank God we got the goal, because the rest of the game, I don't ever want to see any of it.
Well, I know
again.
Tottenham in the Champions League only had 3 shots on target. Do you know? And they all went in, which is fine, but they had better chances
and didn't
score in the league.
Yeah.
And as I said at the time, it was Pep's job to make sure that Champions League result didn't bleed into the rest of the season, because we could be still on for an unprecedented domestic treble. No one's ever done this before. And, you know, so if somebody said to me at the start of the season, look, you're going to go out in the Champions League, but you're going to win all the other competitions... You'd say, I'd bite your hand off for that. You know, that's the stuff of dreams.
And it felt big at the end of the game on Saturday. And they got it off the back, I think, from Wednesday. And that was so important for the players to not, especially when the game was so tense at the end. I was thinking at the time, if we manage not to win now, late on, after what happened on Wednesday, you just hold your hands up.
Yeah. But that would have been it.
Yeah, I was dead impressed, and some of the performances were top draw. Bernardo Silva is just an animal. I don't know how he does it. I don't think I've ever seen a player who can run at everyone.
He is just the Manchester Bumblebee, isn't he? he's just here, he's there, he's everywhere, you know. But it's also that intensity, you know, just it's that intensity that he brings. I mean, I remember him going in and shoving over Van Dijk. But, you know, he pushed him, and he must be only almost waist high to him. This is a kid who just doesn't give up. You know, he's got that sort of steely mentality, a little bit like De Bruyne has, you know, where he brings this A game and this complete winning attitude. Doesn't matter, you know, I can imagine, you know, he's got the young kid and he's playing and he's just beating the kid at absolutely everything. He's just got that winning mentality about everything that he does. And it shines through so much, especially with those two players.
It's infectious as well.
Yeah, of course it is.
He gets the crowd up every time.
Yeah.
And it's almost like he does that on purpose. One player we'll touch on just before we move on, Gundogan. We talked about him, Sam, last time we were together, that he's become so important, but it seems like he's going to be off. So I don't know how you think he's played, but I really like him.
I like him.
Really good recently.
But, you know, he's played really well recently, and I do like what he does. And the thing I like about him, over the overall package of him, is there's no grief off the pitch. He brings what he brings on the pitch. Yeah. You know, you never hear any Mario Balotelli stories, etc. But he's also that player who's not in the first 11. But the drop-off when he has to play is nowhere near as much as the drop-off in any other midfield in the country when they have their Kevin De Bruyne or whoever that might be, when they have to bring a substitute on. The drop-off, the percentage drop-off is massive. But with Gundogan, he's just professional, isn't he? Everything he does.
What do we think about De Bruyne? This is a weird one. It was the biggest downer about Saturday.
Definitely.
It was a great performance. Everyone dug in. We got the 3 points and we carry on with a few games left. He looked genuinely sad after that one. I know he does often, but
he said before the game, I think he even said, I want to win it more than any of my teammates in the Champions League.
Well, so look at him.
He was pretty much crying.
That celebration when he went over to the fans against Tottenham in the Champions League, I've never seen him do that before. He was in everyone's face, he was shouting in the camera, and yeah.
He's just like the Incredible Hulk, but he doesn't go green. You know, you can just see him. But
when he got injured again, though, yeah. I just thought, it's a sad end. But
it's a sad end to his season, but what I would say is, I'd be there, well, I'm no medical expert, as you know, but if he's not got a chance of coming back, even for the cup final, I'd just wrap him up in cotton wool.
Go on holiday,
get your beach, get your, you know.
Whatever.
Well, Guardiola said he could play two or three games, and there's only four left.
No.
Five.
This is a weird opinion, probably amongst, I think so, but it's kind of a weird, I'm not Pep Guardiola, thank the Lord, for City fans' sake, but I wouldn't now. I don't think we missed him as much as we thought in all the games he didn't play. And that's the majority of the season.
My big thing is, so look, City have come this far.
Yeah.
Look how close they are to this domestic treble and how close they were actually to going through to Champions League semi-finals. Largely without De Bruyne. They've come this far.
What's you know,
you'd
games?
Look, you'd want him at United.
I would have loved him tomorrow night.
But, yeah, come this far, they can do it. But also, the way Pep's talking about it and the way he's saying, oh, he won't be able to play in the derby, but we'll see. You know, I think what he means by that is we'll see how he is in training. I don't think he'll be out for long. I mean, I don't know what's going on. I've been away, so I've not spoke to anyone. I've not heard anything. Just what Guardiola said today. But if he's talking about two or three games, it might only be, you know, a week. Because like Bernardo missed the Spurs game, but he was back on. He was back for the next leg. So it might just be one of them. And obviously, look, it's a lot of things are on the derby. And if City win that, then it's just, look, go to Burnley, play Leicester, go to Brighton, just play your normal game, create 30-odd chances, take a couple of them, you'll be fine. And if you've got De Bruyne for them, then you're going to need it. But it's still going to be nervy. Look, if United's out of the way, it's still going to be nervy. So if he is fit, I don't say keep him in cotton wool for next season. I say if he's ready to play against Burnley, chuck him in there. Because even if City win tomorrow night, obviously there's a good chance of that.
There's still three left.
It does seem like that's it. And for Liverpool, I think Liverpool will think that was probably our last chance of City dropping points. It will seem that close, but
we
it's
know
not.
That that's
the
not.
Mentality will change again. Thursday morning, Friday morning. Oh, hold on a minute. Burnley could be difficult.
No, yes. No. Well, if you think about it, we got 100 points last year and we dropped two at Burnley.
Exactly.
Yes.
So there's nothing for granted, taken for granted. When we first won the league, the Premier League in 2012, we were 8 points behind United with 6 games to go. Yeah. They were celebrating.
Well,
so
this
can't
time,
take anything for granted.
This time 5 years ago, in 2014, 35 games, wasn't it? And there were still points left. Or was it 34 games? 4 games to
it was this weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. This weekend was the Gerrard incident. But we will get onto the derby after the break. You're making me nervous now. I said before the show, I've got no nerves now about the derby. But I'm sure Walter will bring us all round. Get in touch with us on the text 87711 or on Twitter at MCR Footy Social or give us a call 0345 111 7625, and we'll be back talking about the Manchester derby.
Manchester City Football Social. Subscribe to the podcast now and never miss a show.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Manchester City Football Social with Blue Moon Rising.
Hello and welcome back to the Manchester Football Social with Blue Moon Rising. I'm Sam Lee, I'm with Adam and Walter, and we've got plenty to get through still tonight. If you want to be involved, you can give us a call on 0345 111 7625. Give us a text on 87711 or tweet us at MCR Footy Social. Later on, we'll be talking about Phil Foden and has Pep Guardiola been justified in his handling of the player? Maybe tied in with that. David Silva, you know, what does the rest of the season hold for him? But now, you know, we talked about it enough in the first bit. Spurs leading right up to this, well, a mad derby it could be. I'm going to let you lads crack on with the start, and I'll jump back in when you need me. What do you reckon tomorrow night, boys?
Well, it screams best and worst time to go to Old Trafford. They're on the back of a 4-0 defeat, which is great, in really bad form. They seem like they're squabbling, falling out in the dressing room, by all accounts. Solskjaer's questioning if the players even want it. The players are spending more time apologising than they are doing running. So that seems like a great time. But on the flip side of that, this is now a time where if they'd have got beat 1-0 at Everton, it's not a disgrace, it's not embarrassing. But they're going to have to come out and at least show something. Because as much as the fans might say, oh, we don't want to win because we don't want Liverpool to win the league, they also want to see their team at least have a go. And that's what I hope is the best that they can do tomorrow, have a go. I just hope, as I said earlier before the show, I really hope that Pep tomorrow just goes in with what he knows is our winning formula and doesn't try anything that seems weird. I mean, to be fair, starting Phil Foden against Spurs seemed
weird. That was weird, wasn't it?
But he was justified in it. But whereas the Spurs away leg in the Champions League, that seemed weird, and it was weird. It felt weird even during the game. But for me, our mentality is strong enough now that they can just go there, rock up and think, you know what, forget that this is a derby. We've just got to win this game and then win the next one and win the next one. But to go into a derby as stronger favourites as we are, Ferguson said back in 2013, lest we forget, that not in my lifetime will City go into a derby. Well, will United go into a derby as underdogs? Tomorrow City are 1-2 on to win away at United at Old Trafford. What odds can you get on United, Walter?
I believe it's 6-1.
That's just funny, isn't it?
Just like the 6-1. Take it. It's just my favourite derby of all time. I know. What I would say to City fans if they're feeling a bit nervous is if you take your emotion out of it, and if you were looking at, just imagine in a weird universe where, we'll take Chelsea for example, a Pep Guardiola and this set of players and they needed to go to Old Trafford and win, you'd back them. The bookies are backing them. It's just because we've got that much emotional investment in the game that we're all kind of like, ooh, do you know what I mean? We're kind of starting to second guess ourselves. And it's perfectly correct. I mean, about Pep Guardiola, sometimes he just pulls out
a rabbit out of the hat, and you're thinking, oh. But more often than not, it works.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, you either buy into 100% Pep, or you don't have him at your club. And there's not another manager in the world that I would want. And if you're getting nervous about it, go down to the book. Just take a look at the bookies' odds.
Yeah,
United are.
It's not for no reason, is it?
No, it's not for no reason. And if you want to put a safety bet on, make yourself feel better. I don't know, but it's just one of those situations where we've got the better players.
Yeah.
You know, if you went through and said, right, we want the make a Manchester 11. You know, the case for a lot of those United players is starting to fall short. And let's get this right: if United had won at the weekend, they'd be in third now. But it's just that City and Liverpool are so far ahead of the competition. You know, it's almost like neither team deserves not to win the league with the points sort of total that they've got. So, as I would say, Adam, take the emotion out of it.
Yeah.
I know it's difficult, but take the emotion out of it and have a look, player for player, pound for pound, who's got the better team, who's got the better squad. And I know things, you know, that's the beauty of football. It's not always the person with the most, you know, best players. You know, we used to turn United over sometimes, and we were garbage, you know, for many years. But there was that one time you would turn them over. And that's why we all follow football, and that's the beauty of football. You know, there's nothing set in stone, probably apart from Liverpool and Huddersfield, that is.
Yeah,
but there's not much, you know, there's nothing set in stone. So take the emotion out of it and enjoy it.
Yeah, I completely agree, really. Look, a lot of the talk about United since Sunday has been they need a reaction, they're going to be motivated for it. But so City. City are motivated for it. Yeah. You know, City have got the better players, the better team, the better manager, all of that. And the motivation's there as well. They know their job, as I was saying before. Pretty much if you win this one, it's in City's hands. It's just you can go to games there and where you expect to win and play the normal game. And you'll do it. And yeah, I completely agree. You know, there will be so many people, City fans listening to this, probably every single one, who at some point in the last week has thought, oh, I've got a feeling about this. Spurs are going to equalise. Oh, Palace are going to pull it back.
I thought
it
that
doesn't
Palace.
Happen. Cut through that. Exactly.
Yeah.
Cut through that. Cut through the pessimism. Look at it. And look, like Walter says, you know, upsets do happen. United have got quality players. United, you know, Pogba playing a ball through to Martial on the break is different to most other teams in the Premier League who can counter-attack on City. There's a bit of quality there that a lot of teams don't have. But if you look at it with cold eyes, City have got the better team. They've got a greater motivation than United have. And, well, I suppose as Guardiola said today, maybe he was poking the bear a bit unnecessarily, Old Trafford is no longer a scary place to go for teams, especially for City.
Well, I think he's a bit daft. I think he's almost written the Man United motivation team talk. You know, they just put those quotes up and then that can come back to bite you. I mean, what was interesting before was just sort of the differences between the teams and the squads, etc., etc. If you look at how we were talking about Kevin De Bruyne and that will to win, and it's almost, he plays both sides of the game. You know, he's got this wonderful technique, but he'll get back and he'll stick a foot in and he'll take it personally if someone takes the ball off him. He'll chase them back. And then compare that to United's talisman, Pogba. We're talking about a player who's got all the talent in the world, but just doesn't seem motivated, bothered. He's not got that pride in himself, that pride in the shirt. You know, we're talking about, we could put forward a case that he's Man United's best player. If United sold him tomorrow, there wouldn't be outrage from the stands.
No.
You know, if Pep Guardiola decided to get rid of Kevin De Bruyne, there'd be riots outside the Etihad. But that's the difference. You know, that's the mentality. You know, Pogba can bring that, and we've seen him bring that mentality to a game against Manchester City, but it's not often enough.
Yeah, and hopefully, well, he was good for that second half last season at the Etihad, but again, all that did was just prolong the inevitable. So that was a very different game for City, where us losing that, it was a bit embarrassing because we no doubt had lots of plans to celebrate that day. But this time, the players know, you go there, you get a win, you get three more wins, you win the league. This, for me, is very much go there, get the job done, get out. I saw a United fan tweet before, and I was inclined to agree, that City will beat United tomorrow in the tunnel before they go out. And when I was talking about that, That's something that used to happen.
Not with pizza and milk.
Not with, well, I hope it is with milk again. That was the best bit. But you're looking across now at those two teams and you just think, come on, who's going to want that? And well, I'll talk about the team in a sec, but, well, I think Company will play.
Well, yeah, yeah. Because he's Company, the, Fernandinho, those two for
the
sure.
Spine and David Silva, because I think he's just going to go for who's been here, who's got it done here before in as difficult situations. Company probably scored the most important derby goal we've ever seen at the Etihad, that 1-0. Yeah.
I'm just thinking about the jump.
Yeah, yeah, he's still jumping. he knows what it's like. Silva knows what it's like. Aguero knows what it's like. That spine, for me, tomorrow starts. I know that we'll talk about Silva later in the show, but I think that's going to be important tomorrow. I don't think they've got that. Like you said about Pogba, I don't think they've got those players now who've been there, especially in a derby where, I mean, let's be honest, United don't need to win tomorrow. If we put it that simply, if they don't win tomorrow and beat Chelsea, they're still well in the hunt for the top four. So we're quite fortunate in that regard that they don't need to win. But like you said, if you take all the colour out of it, black and white on a piece of paper, City got the better team. City have to win.
Solskjaer might even, for all Solskjaer's big words about, the attitude of the players isn't right. He was talking about it Friday and he's really stoked it up since the Everton game. He might drop some of these players.
Yeah.
Because you've also got the opportunity to, you could arguably say he was resting them for Chelsea if he needed to get out, if they lost against City. But he could also send them a message. Now, there's talk about Lukaku going, obviously Pogba, he's not going to rest De Gea or drop De Gea, I wouldn't have thought. But there'll be a lot of players there. He could justifiably start on the bench. And, I mean, I don't think there's going to be any part of him that, doesn't want Liverpool to win the league and that kind of stuff. But we don't really know how much of a mess it is at Old Trafford at the minute. Because
Japanese,
it's one of those...
Well,
yeah, well, yeah.
That's what he said.
We see this situation where, oh, yeah, well, again, it's kind of the pessimism. From the City point of view, it's, oh, United will need to react and they will come out fighting and all this. And you can see that in some of the players. But if some of them really aren't bothered, if some of them really are strolling around and not,
if they
don't only care
Everton.
About their reputation, if that,
yeah,
then, like, yeah, the Japanese knotweed. Maybe it is an absolute mess. Like Mourinho, people were thinking, the game before Mourinho he went to Anfield and they were like, oh, yeah, maybe he can pull off a big win here. No, because the dressing room had gone. The dressing room had gone at Anfield, and United went there, fine, a couple of Shaqiri deflections.
But they,
unlucky
they
in
got,
that sense,
they
but
got
yeah,
mullered.
Well beaten, didn't deserve to win. It could well be a similar situation already. I mean, you can do old United show on that, and the show tomorrow night before the game, there'll be a lot of United views on whether it's got to that situation already under Solskjaer, which would be incredible, really. But that could be the case, It could be the case where, United will be backed by the crowd, but if City keep the ball for the first 10, 15 minutes, that'll be gone as well.
One thing on that, and this is not the place. We're not slagging anyone off for not selling tickets. We've already come out and said that that's all nonsense. But it's so rare for United to have released tickets the day before a derby, Old Trafford. That's just bizarre for me. I don't think that happens normally. And I don't know whether that's a lot of we kind of want City to win because of Liverpool. And there might be a bit of that. But one thing that strikes me is what happens tomorrow night at Old Trafford if City go and embarrass United. How toxic does that then get between the fact, Sam, you might know because you've sat in stands everywhere. What happens then if they get embarrassed? So the Barcelona steamrolled them.
3-0.
Everton embarrassed them.
4-0.
And tomorrow, so say tomorrow, 5-0. Yeah. If
I think it'd be more confusion than anything. Because I mean, if you look how defiant the fans have been, even with Moyes, I mean there was the plane banner, wasn't there, infamously with Moyes. But a lot of the fans didn't, were very defiant and it was more 20 times and singing about the club's history and that kind of stuff. With Van Gaal towards the end, there wasn't really an outright revolt even then. Mourinho towards the end, a lot of fans were unhappy.
Yeah.
And a lot of fans on social media were unhappy and, social media and matchgoers. But at the game, that never really spilled over. There were the groans and stuff like that, but it never really got outright defiance. And look, if you're not going to turn on a manager like Mourinho, you're not going to turn on Solskjaer.
Well, that's great.
So it's just going to, I just think it'll be more defiant, more cheering about the club's history and that kind of stuff. And he might just be putting a brave face in the case that it's a heavy defeat.
It reminds me of, no, I know what you're thinking. It reminds me of when City appointed Stuart Pearce
and you had Stuart Pearce there, and he came in on the back of a lot of goodwill, and what a fantastic bloke he is. Psycho, you know, he's just blood, guts and thunder. And that, you know, he was the type of player you wanted in your team. Solskjaer was the type of player you wanted on the bench to come off and get these goals, but not as a manager. You know, this is a guy who's flopped at Cardiff, found the mean. He's someone was saying he's lost six of his last eight.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't what we would call a fantastic run. It's the worst run United have been on for nearly 20 years.
But this is great for us because we can just sit back, laugh about it and hopefully get the points tomorrow. But we do need to just cut away for a second, gather our thoughts, and we'll come back after the break. We'll talk a bit about Phil Foden, Riyad Mahrez and a bit of David Silva.
Manchester City Football Social. Subscribe to the podcast now and never miss a show. Manchester City Football Social with Blue Moon Rising.
Good evening and welcome back to the Manchester City Football Social with Blooming Rising. I'm Adam and I'm joined by Sam and Walter. We've got loads left to get through, so I'm just going to get straight into it. Let's talk about Phil Foden. Mm. He's now scored in every competition he's played in this season. Some have slagged Pep off and slagged him off for not being ambitious enough like Sancho. But I think we all saw on Saturday, this is not a player who's going to be on the fringes for very long. Walter, tell me about your love for the Stockport young man.
Yeah, well, he's just a talent, isn't he? You know, and he's only doing his GCSEs a couple of years ago. You know, he'd have been there in his school uniform, and he just strikes me. I love the way he's down to earth and he's level headed, but you can see the coaching that Pep Guardiola instills in him. You know, when the ball's coming to him, you can see his body shape. You can see him looking around the pitch as the ball's coming to him to see where City players are and the opposition is. So he's one of those players with that unique ability to be a couple of steps ahead, if you know what I mean, because he's seeing the bigger picture. And this youth academy at Manchester City and this Pep Guardiola, we're going to be making diamonds over the next few years, and he's just the start. And these diamonds are ultimately going to help England in any World Cup scenarios and situations. How he's not got in the fringes of that squad is mind-blowing. And we all forget, I know we sort of made the point before, how young he is. And if you look at most 18-year-olds and most top clubs around Europe, there's not many 18-year-olds starting. You know, there's they're getting drip-fed in. Long gone are the days of, Rooney tearing it up when he was probably about 12 at Everton. But, you know, you can see the physical development of him as well.
Yeah.
I mean, we spoke about Dele Alli and how bigger he's got and the sort of benefits to his game that's brought. But this is going to be for Foden as well, because he does sometimes look like a kid playing against adults, you know, especially when he comes up against Pogba. But he's got that tenacity as well, which makes up for any sort of shortcomings in his height.
Sam, does he play tomorrow?
No.
I was going to say, wouldn't have thought.
No, I would have said absolutely not against Spurs as well. And when I saw it, I was flicking between apps on Saturday when I was, and I read it and I thought, oh, this is the bench. And I went to look up to see the real starting lineup. And I was like, he's actually playing. I genuinely couldn't believe it. But not tomorrow night. Not tomorrow night. Not with David Silva on the bench the other day. Not with Fernandinho on the bench. Obviously, with De Bruyne being injured, there's a spot there. But he's going to appreciate Gundogan, isn't he? Yeah. The more advanced game intelligence than Foden.
I think that's a nice time to mention David Silva. Let's not go too far in this. We haven't got the time. But let's face it and be honest about it. He's been far from his best the last few weeks. And you're not allowed to say that. Do not put that on Twitter everyone hates it. But he has. The level he set last season and for the majority of this season, up until probably the last couple of months, was exceptionally high. And he has dipped beneath that a little bit. I don't know whether that's burnout. But there's two questions here. Is he playing badly and we just don't want to admit it? And B, is Foden now his rival in terms of place? Instead of it being Foden instead of Gundogan or whoever, Silva's now on the fringes a bit like Foden. It's a really weird
one. I wouldn't say
he's
on the fringes because he's starting most games.
Yeah, I think for Spurs he was just kind of giving a bit of a rest and keeping fresh, because like you say, he brings a lot to to what he needed Old Trafford.
See, I think the form, I think he's almost like the, you know, the biblical story of Samson when he had his hair cut and he went weak. He's almost the opposite of that. He's grown his hair back and his playing seems to have suffered for whatever reason. I don't think he's playing as well. And this is a guy who's set the most exceptional standards. You know, if you were to pick a midfielder and draw one, it wouldn't be David Silva. He's small, he's one-footed. It's all going on upstairs with him because he's got such footballing intelligence and he reads the game so well. And he can find a pass just where a pass is not available. But it doesn't seem to be coming off as consistently as it has been in the past. You know, and I'm not saying that that's the end of David Silva. He's a human being, and, you know, like most human beings, you will not perform at the exact same level over a course of a number of years. So he just seems to me to be not lost his way a little bit, but he does seem to be getting shut down a little easier. The opposition seem to know what he's going to do.
Is this a little bit because of De Bruyne's injury this year? Obviously put him out of the majority of the season, which means Silva's had to play an unbelievable amount of games. And at his age, that is going to creep up on you.
He has said privately a few months ago, he can't play three games a week, you know, anymore. But he's been asked to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he thought, you know, he was in a position where he would need to have his game time managed and he'd play fewer games. But that obviously hasn't happened for various different reasons. And, you know, partly because Guardiola keeps trusting him. I mean, it is difficult to know exactly where he stands because against Spurs, it could well have just been, you know, a mixture of the two factors. Not playing brilliantly, but also needs a rest and will be needed at Old Trafford. So it would be interesting to see what happens. But I would, you know, of the next four games, obviously we expect him to start the derby, but I wouldn't be surprised if he played all three Premier League games after that just because the stakes are so high. I mean, fine, he's already played Foden in one game and that's kind of thrown my logic out the window a bit, but I just kind of think that
He's gonna
get everything he can out of Danny.
Say that about the league games, but I think Foden will play in the cup final. So that's that for me is already only because of the run that he's been on in the FA Cup and the fact that Pep clearly trusts him.
I mean, now after the Spurs game, there's no denying that, is there?
And as he said, I am a genius when he was asked, was he right to play him?
I remember last year when Pep said at the end of the season, he said that Silva was not going to play as many games or feature as much.
He lied. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what managers do, don't they? You just don't believe a word they say. But if you take him at face value, there's no reason for him, there's no benefits for him to lie about this.
So well, I think the Sane situation, which we might come to, that's probably had a bit of a knock-on because you probably didn't expect Bernardo to have to play in the front line. And obviously De Bruyne's injury as well is probably...
Do you not find Silva plays better when Sane's on the pitch? The two fine.
Yeah, they link up really well.
They do link up really well.
And you know when City lost those games over Christmas and Sane, you know, City were just crossing the ball? It's because David Silva was out and that link-up wasn't
there.
He
plays that final ball to Sane who then squares it for Sterling or Aguero,
doesn't
he?
Yeah, exactly.
That's probably a good thing to come on to. Sane... Really curious case at the moment. We saw at the start of the season where he was left out and then he played really well for a large part of the season and now, he's not playing. He's definitely not playing in the big games, which is slightly odd. Is that because Pep doesn't trust him or is it just because we work better in a system where Bernardo plays out wide right and you have Stone on the left? Is he just not getting in because of other performances?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean... There's definitely a bit of like off the field stuff tying into it, definitely. But in terms of like they're not trusting him, there's an element of that as well. But the biggest factor, I think, is the fact that Raheem Sterling and Bernardo Silva, I mean, never mind the goals and the assists and how consistent they are, how often do they give it away?
They don't.
How often are they caught out because they're not tracking back? Like Bernardo, obviously, against Spurs was a great example of how hard he works. And it's not that Leroy Sané, I mean, people kind of talk about him. He suffers in comparison to those other two because they're phenomenal. You know, they're world class at the moment. And he's just slightly not as consistent as that. But people talk about him as if he's some kind of Adama Traore. You know, he just gets the ball and he just runs until he loses it. And that's it. He's not quite that. He's just not quite as
just not
consistent
clicking at the minute.
As the other two. You know, the other two are putting in 9-10 out of 10s every week. Guardiola's thinking, well, I'm going to stick with them. Because Leroy might do a 7, he might do an 8, he might do a 4. You're not quite sure. But the thing is, with Sane, you know you're going to get the goals, you know you're going to get the assists, he assists. You just need to look at the numbers. You know he understands the system. I personally think City look better. For whatever reason, I'm more comfortable when I see Sane.
Same.
At Salhurst Park. Yeah. Really out wide on the left-hand side, literally the old chalk
stretch
on his boots.
The game, doesn't he?
That looks better for me, but obviously when he's not there, there is no tangible difference. You could say City are better. It's just a weird situation where he's suffering, and the biggest problem is the fact that the other two ahead of him are really, really good.
But if we're going to talk about players who are slightly out of favour, but another player who's got more than 10 goals and more than 10 assists all season, it's yeah. Riyad Mahrez. Yeah. People forget that. What is going to happen there? I know we need to be quick, but he's not going to leave in summer.
I think the thing with Mahrez is he wasn't a sort of normal City buy.
No.
You look at City have gone in and they've got all these young players who have got the ability. I mean, I think Sané's got the ability to go and win the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah.
But you look at all these players, the buying potential. With him, you wonder, they bought someone who they thought was at the top of the game and would come in and hit the ground running. But it doesn't seem to have paid off. Not as much as, for example, the other two, Bernardo and Raheem.
It's hard, isn't it? When you buy a player who was that good at Leicester and he was the biggest fish, and what was a smaller pond? Yeah, they won the league. He's now come to a club where he's not going to be the biggest fish. So, but we are going to have to call it quits. Oh, we're not. It's fine. It's not. We've got,
well, now we're on Mahrez. We've got loads. Obviously, the story today is that, you know, he's been saying he's unhappy with his playing time.
Yeah, that's bad.
But that's why he was left out of the squad at Huddersfield. I wrote that at the time, that he was left out of the squad at Huddersfield because he'd been complaining about his game time, you know, around the dressing room. Obviously, Guardiola got wind of it, and it was the whole "I need happy faces" kind of thing. If you're not, you know, if you're not in the team, you need to prove to me why you should be, not moan about it. So it was that. And obviously, if he was unhappy about it then, and he was, you know, because at the time he was playing a lot of minutes, but it was just in the FA Cup, Carabao Cup, that kind of thing, wasn't really playing the big games. But he's barely played since then. You know, how long ago was Huddersfield? At the end of January, before the Newcastle game even. So you can see why, if he was unhappy then, he's going to be unhappy now. But selling him in the summer is another big thing. But with João Felix interests,
yeah,
I mean, like 120 million release clause, I mean, how much, if you can get him for lower than that, how much lower? 90?
And then,
you know, they can get George Mendes to move a few players around. No, that's genuinely what happened.
It is. Yeah, yeah.
That's how Ronnie Lopez ended up at Monaco when they got they needed to stump up the extra 10 million for Mangala, and he said, "Give me a couple of hours." And he rang up Monaco because obviously he's got a big in at Monaco, and then he came back to City. He went, "Do you want to sign Ronnie Lopez to Monaco for 8 million?" They went, "That'll work," and they did that. And now Otamendi's one of his clients. Otamendi could go in the summer. I think he probably will. Mangala again. He signed up to this new contract, so he's going to go. They're trying to wring some money out of him from somewhere. So, but if City get in João Felix, then maybe somebody does have to go. Obviously, I'm sure a lot of people listening to this would rather it would be Mahrez than Sane, but I can't quite put my finger on it. Gabriel Jesus, even.
Yeah, that
because City
me.
Were looking at a number nine as well, Jovic. And I mean, Jovic might be going somewhere else. Maybe this is why City want Felix. But the fact that City wanted a number nine in the first place makes you think
that's
you can't have three. So it's interesting, I mean, something we'll cover.
It's proper
in the
Game
future,
of Thrones, all the pieces are coming into
what are your,
I'm not seeing Monday night's episode yet, shut up.
somebody please tweet at Sammy Goldie's spoilers. So, quick predictions, please, for tomorrow night.
The last time I was there, it was 3-0, so I'm going to go for 3-0 again.
Yeah, 3-1, City.
I'll go 2-1, I think we'll just stumble over the line. Just.
Well.
But again, it could be one of those games, or it could well be come out, start like we have done in the last few games, and if we can blow them away, a bit like in that 3-0 last time you were there, we can get it done. But if you listen on the podcast, don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next week. And hopefully, it's going to be a really, really, really happy show, because hopefully there'll be two more wins and we'll be two games away from a Premier League title.
Yes.
Manchester City Football Social. Subscribe to the podcast now and never miss a show.
Thanks very much for listening to the Manchester Football Social with Blue Moon Rising. I would imagine if you listen to this podcast, you've already subscribed. If you haven't, please do so. And even leave us a little review if you fancy it. Hopefully a nice one. We've got a couple of questions that we didn't quite have time to get to in the main show. Adam?
You're
the man
got,
with the questions. Hopefully the answers as well.
Oh, I haven't got them. So Mo on Discord asks, if we were to sell... I'm paraphrasing here, sorry Mo, your question was much better formed than this. If we sell Mendy in summer, will we be selling... Basically, who would we bring in to replace Mendy? If we sold Mendy, or would Zinchenko step up? What's the answer there?
I think wasn't the question that it was a bigger if than that? Is it should Mendy go?
Yeah, go should.
The thing is, I think the decision had already been made that Mendy was going to stay. Zinchenko was doing so well. That new contract's not been announced yet, has it? But that's not far off. So it was going to be those two. I mean, I'd even heard a bit of a rumour that there wasn't going to be a left back at all. But I mean, look, with Mendy out of the team again now, the knee swelling problem, I mean, it would be a bit of a risk to go into next season. So the only way City don't get a new left back is if they'd... Well, carrying on. If they get Rodri, if they get someone like João Félix, and they spend so much money, maybe on centre back and right back, because if Danilo goes, if Otamendi goes, if Gundogan goes, maybe they think, right, well, it's a risk again at left back, but we've come this far, we'll be fine. They're gonna spend maybe 200 million on, you know, midfielders, forwards, a centre back, a right back. It's a bit of a weird one though, isn't it? I'd love to get a handle on it.
I think you need a left back, just because we want to win the Champions League, we want to be the best team, therefore you need the best squad.
You don't want to be in a position where Delph has to play the first game at Spurs, and that's where the goal came from, that one lapse.
I'm going with it. So I don't know who it is, but there's somebody out there. Somebody out there for us.
I mean, that part of the question, I don't know. I mean, I'm the City correspondent. I can answer questions about City all day, but if you're asking me about, you know, is there somebody in the Bundesliga who could play left back, I couldn't tell you.
Right, this one's coming to you, Walter. Right, second question from Liam, also on Discord. So this one's quite long-winded. Again, I'm going to paraphrase. It's basically, if City win the domestic treble this season, we are getting ahead of ourselves here.
That's a big if.
And then if we don't replicate that next season and win two trophies, one trophy, will it be a letdown? Will it have been a bad season?
No, not at all. I mean, you look at, we won the Carabao Cup on penalties. And, you know, the FA Cup, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in there. You know, we had the luck against Swansea. So, no, I don't think you've got to be in it and competing. So if we're playing well and we're competing, for me, that's all you can ask for.
And it would have been weird if we'd have won the quadruple, if we'd have gone all the way this year. Because next year, anything you do will be a letdown. Even this season, if we win the league on 98 points, it's going to be a disappointment in some people's eyes because we won it with 100 last year. We can't... No, not in City fans, but it will be a lesser achievement just because that's the way numbers work. Oh, they won it, but it wasn't as convincing as last year. It's just the way that football works, I suppose, where people are always... Nothing will ever be good enough because of Twitter.
It's a mad thing to be asking at this stage because, you know, that's far from assured. But if it is, you can be sure there will be people holding City to that standard next season. I mean, maybe rightly so, but there's different factors. I mean... even at this point, I don't think City really need to prove anything to anyone. Maybe in the Champions League, but in terms of our City, a great Premier League team, yes. And then if they do go on and actually win the title and add the FA Cup as well, then I mean that is, that's blown out of the water. There's no doubt about it. It's just kind of how great they can go on to be.
Make sure you guys listening get your questions in next week. You can get them through on Twitter. You can text us. You can ring us during the live show that we do on Exodus Manchester. Or you can get involved on the Discord chat. Just make sure you get them in and we'll do our best to answer them. But thanks, everyone. I think that was a nice little way to end. Thanks to you two for being so good.
Thank you very much for the invite. And, always good.
And thanks to you guys for listening. And as Sam said, if you are listening to the podcast, make sure you are subscribed and leave us a nice rating. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.